Big refund, big project, big savings at Menards. Turn your tax refund into your next big project. That patio you've been dreaming of is more affordable than you think when you do it yourself. Get free estimates fast using our landscaping design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on the largest selection of concrete landscaping blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Oh my gosh, Degrassi alumni, here we are again. It's another episode of the D-Grads podcast. And your hosts, of course, are yours truly, Shane Kipple, Gavin Spinner-Mason.
And I'm Mike Lobel, a.k.a. Jay Hogarth. Bonjour tout le monde. I'm going to do the whole episode in French. No, I'm just kidding. I don't have the skills for that. Today we are covering Season 2, Episode 6, Drive. This is an episode, I had a good time watching it. It's about growing up and you feel ready for the new responsibility, more freedom, to take on the wheels, take on the axles, take on the road. You've got the keys to life in your hand, am I right? But you're going to prove to everybody that you have
whatever it takes.
Of course, you're completely proven wrong.
Does that ever really change? As soon as you get comfortable with what you know and what you're doing, you really think you have a handle on your current situation and you understand that life, what life is all about. That's when everything gets turned on its head and you're humbled and
absolutely
have to build yourself back up. Yeah.
From what I know, like anytime you stick your head out, and that's like part of growth, right? Like it's not going to be easy. Everything is hard and life is hard. And if you want something, if you want to do something, you know, there's always going to be obstacles in your way. So get
Nothing
used to it, kids.
Easy is worth doing.
No easy day.
The only easy day was yesterday.
That's what I meant. Yeah. Thank you.
No easy days.
It's even more hardcore than the Navy SEALs. Oh, my gosh.
But yeah, this was a fun episode. I have to say, I was very worried. I was very worried in starting the podcast. You know that I was... It wasn't that I was nervous about seeing how I did. I never liked watching myself. I never enjoyed it. I was hypercritical, because it was me analyzing all the facial movements. And when I lost all my weight, I was very self-conscious about how I looked. And then I had to start working out, and then I see it on camera, and okay, that area needs work, that area needs work, why am I slouching, this and that, right? All these
things. And how did you feel this time, years later?
I'm just along for the ride, and
it feels great.
I'm okay with everything. It's fun to watch. In this episode, I think I had my first scene where I was on camera at the same time as our lovely Pat Mastroianni, which was a treat. And I can't wait till you and I end up on camera together and we can start, you know,
really
having
fun.
A great time.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be fun.
We're not too far away, man.
No, we are rounding the corners pretty quickly.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
On this go-kart track that is Degrassi. But it's interesting because I'm curious. I'm wondering if you could see, you know, like that version of you was almost, I mean, so long ago. It's like a different, it must be like watching a different person to some degree.
One of my older brothers has always told me that I remind him so much of his youngest
son. Of Spinner from Degrassi.
You're right. But of his youngest son. And I never saw it. I never saw it.
Oh.
And now in these episodes, where I'm a few years younger than he is currently, it's a scary resemblance.
Really? It's like terrifying. Watching your nephew.
And I'm not sure how I feel about it. And I also know all the crazy things I was getting into at that tender age. And
you can't do anything to protect them. They're on their own journey. You got to let it go.
No, but at that age, you don't think you need any protection at all. That's where it flips.
It must be really wild because all the kids of this era, like the Gen Zers are they're all wearing the same clothes that we all wore in the 90s. Like somehow all of the Degrassi fits are back in style, I've noticed.
That's why you just got to keep your clothes. As soon as you stop growing,
oh my gosh,
don't throw outfits out.
The most hideous thing in your closet right now, folks, one day you're going to thank us.
Your closet should look like a hand-me-down store, like a Valley Village.
It should look like the Cirque du Soleil wardrobe department.
That's right. Yeah. Maybe a few less, masks.
Jester.
Yeah, that's right. Bells. That's right. Anything that you would put on your cap, feathers. But, time and place.
Totally. There's a time and place. But keep the mime shtick up. It's cool. Your colleagues at work love it. Drive was a song by The Cars. It took me a second to realize which version of the
Incubus song.
The Incubus song. But this one, we're all about the 80s throwbacks. So Drive was a song by The Cars. It came out in 1984. The song on its surface feels like a love song. It's very wistful, remorseful. It feels like a relationship that, somebody doesn't want to be over. Maybe the other person wants to be over. I don't really know how it connects to this episode.
Not everything has to make sense.
This episode's about driving, so that's clearly there. Is it about Craig who... he thinks he's in control, like the person in the song and the relationship. And he's asking all these questions like, where are we going? Is he ready to continue? I don't know.
Maybe the underlying lesson about the song titles is the more direct and succinct the title is at describing the episode, the less the song makes sense. The body of the song actually applies to it.
All right, let's get into it.
Get Tour. So this is Drive, season 2, episode 6, came out October 27th, 2002. U.S. air date, November 25th, 2002. This was written by Aaron Martin. He did the story. Yana Senor with the story. And James Hurst with the teleplay. Director, Stephen Skaney. So you know it's going to be fun.
I love that guy. I miss that guy.
I hope he's doing well. I miss him
too.
So much.
Yeah. Me too. We open on Jeremiah Motors. Joey is in full car salesman mode, and he looks good doing it. And Craig, obviously, is learning the ropes of car salesmanship. There's a customer that comes up, he really talks up this one vehicle, and Joey's pretty impressed. He says that Craig's a natural, and he asks Craig to drive the car. This car is like got to be washed, and someone's expecting to buy it. Craig is thrilled as he takes the car keys from Joey. Maybe a little too thrilled. He's like having a fit of giddiness in the front seat. I'm getting major Ferris Bueller Day Off vibes.
Oh, 100%. And Craig's face was borderline turned on. Like there was there was some horn dog to that a little bit. Right?
There kind of was. He was, something about the vehicle that really sparked his plugs. You know what I'm saying?
I do. What I also thought was funny was you have a potential buyer who's not paying attention to one car, and then you're going to listen to the 14-year-old kid that's probably the son of the sleazy car salesman owner of this, and you're going to let him sway your decision? I don't know. I don't know.
And that car was like so dirty, man.
If
my car was that dirty, I would just throw it out and get a new car.
That's get someone to draw the nice little designs all over it.
We roll the credits. Now at home, Joey is going away and he's leaving Craig home alone. Now I'm getting major Home Alone vibes here, Shane. I got a lot of vibes in this episode. I'm going to tell you about them. So just buckle up.
Okay.
No parties? Yeah. Okay. I think we know where this is going to go. Anytime a parent says, and just remember, no parties, we know what the episode's about.
Yeah. No parties, no girls, no drugs.
At school now, Jimmy talks about Kid Elric tickets with Spinner and Marco, but they're sold out. Major bummer. This is the first time I'm hearing about Kid Elric. I had no idea Kid Elric went back to season two.
When was Kid Elric talked about again?
After Jimmy was in the wheelchair, there was a Kid Elric concert.
So who is Kid Elric supposed to be? Like, who is he a spoof of?
Kid Rock? Kid Rock? Maybe?
Yeah, I would think Kid Rock.
Do we buy that Jimmy is going to a Kid Rock concert?
Yes.
I do. Yeah, I actually do that.
I think we just have to. Yeah.
Okay, they're sold out. But Marco, his mother, is in the music business. So maybe she can score tickets? Nope, she's a piano teacher. Same business. Wrong end.
That's a great line too. Yeah, what about your mom, Marco? She's in the music business. She teaches piano.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Okay, Craig walks in at this very moment and cheers the group up, declaring that he is going to throw a house party. But the catch is that Sean is supposed to be there, so Jimmy is out. Marco and Spinner are in. Great. Just one condition, as you mentioned. No girls, no booze, just donuts?
Donuts? Yeah.
It is surprising that they're setting up this house party and then we go to the lamest house party ever, right? Like, they're giving us the anti-house party.
Yeah, well, if you take away all the things that can make those parties fun, what else are you going to do?
That's it.
A house party is only as fun as the things going on in the house party.
This is true. Meanwhile, Ashley, who... has an entirely whole new look, by the way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is like, she's cut her hair.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is new, and
Nobody mentioned it.
They didn't mention it. They didn't show it. Yeah, it was just a reveal.
It's almost like a fast forward in time. Ashley and Ellie have been hanging out off camera, mm-hmm. or at least we get the idea that they are. And mm-hmm. Ashley's cut her hair. She's like more gothy, and mm-hmm. she's got more piercings, and... Now I'm getting major The Craft vibes. This movie is like this three movies in one.
Ashley talks about it later in the episode that she was trying to win points with Ellie. She lost all her friends. Now she has a new friend, and she's trying to navigate her way through this new existence of hers. And if you only have one friend, you're, especially back in those days, you're going to do whatever you can to hold on to them. And so that would probably explain her style shift. Exactly. That would explain her style shift as well. I was like that. The first friend that I had that I thought was so cool, I started dressing like him. People were calling me a poser or copycat because I started dressing like him. And I was like, I don't care. I like this better. And he thinks I'm cool. So
listen, we all did it. I switched schools in grade 5. So like I had to meet a whole new group of friends, and this was like a cooler school. It was like the kids were a little bit more hip, and these guys that I really wanted to be friends with, they were all Nirvana fans.
Mm.
And they were like, do you listen to Nirvana? And it kind of like, I thought I saw a Nirvana CD at my house, like that my parents had, but obviously it wasn't Nirvana. It was Nirada, which is like some sort of 1980s ambient sort of like world music kind of mix of artists.
You're like, oh, yeah.
I totally like have like three of their albums. And they were like, whoa, you're so cool. And then I went home and to my absolute horror realized that I had inadvertently lied to them. And I never told them the truth after. I just went out and bought all the Nirvana CDs I could and like pretended.
Well, at least they didn't ask you like, what's your favorite song? But like none of the singles. Yeah. Like, what do you like?
You know, the Chakra tune?
Yeah, you know what? I listen to it when I get a massage.
It's so relaxing, Nirvana.
Jamie Johnson, when he came on the show and we were playing music together, I thought he was super cool because he was very like, he was stoic and you didn't really... You never really got, or at least I never got a real gauge on how he felt about me or about anything. I just couldn't tell. So this one time we were out on the front steps on a break, having a smoke, and I was trying to bond with him over music, and I wasn't a big Radiohead fan at that point. I have since become, but I knew he was a huge Radiohead fan, and he was talking about that. I'm like, oh yeah, Radiohead. He's like, yeah, what's your favorite song? And the only one that came to mind for some reason was a title that stood out to me. I'm like, Tree Fingers. And he's like, wow, you picked literally the only Radiohead song I skip every time. I hate that song.
He said that?
Yeah. And then I just died inside. Because I lied, and the lie did not pay off.
Oh, no.
It made me look even worse.
Couldn't even. Oh, yeah. Jamie Johnson. Come on, buddy.
I know.
I actually don't even back remember to that Radiohead song, to be honest, and I'm a huge fan.
That's right. It's a real skipper, but that title stood out to me so much, and I didn't know any of their songs. So I'm like, yeah, that one. I don't want to pick, like, you know.
You want a deep cut, fake plastic trees or like Creep or whatever.
No. I wanted to make it seem like I really knew. Yeah,
I'm into the B-sides.
The good. Exactly.
Amazing. Yeah. All right. Well, Ashley's trying to fit in. And she gets an idea staring at Ellie's belly button piercing. She wants to get a belly button piercing now. Yay. We're going to do it. In Quan's class, we are talking similes and metaphors. Craig is having trouble focusing. The clock is moving backwards. It's like a horror fever dream. We all remember what it was like at 3:05 p.m. on a Friday in the summer. It was like, let's just get out of here. Come on.
Yeah. Especially when you have something really cool going on after school.
Like a wicked house party at your new house with your new quasi-dad. The crew is on their way now that school is over to Craig's house when suddenly Joey is there. Uh-oh, they're busted. They all stop dead in their tracks thinking the game is over. But Uncle Joey pulling their legs. He's got chips and Kraft dinner for everybody. So sweet. What a mensch.
Did you clock Craig's reaction when Joey yelled in front of everyone else?
Yeah.
He got legitimately scared because it gave him flashbacks of his
Totally, dude. I noticed that in Craig's performance in this episode, and I thought they were really, really smart to play on that. Because I think what we're learning through this episode is how Craig is, he's primed for this environment. And now that he's got ostensibly like a new dad who is a completely different parenting style, is very fair and is loving and would never treat him the same way as his dad did, but he's shell-shocked.
Yeah. And I think his friends in this episode are challenging him to test these new boundaries of his, because it seems like up until this point, he's still a visitor in this home. The goodwill that Joey is shown to him and taking him out of his old environment, giving him a place to stay, showing him what a real parental figure should be. And he's probably not done anything to rub Joey the wrong way because he owes him so much. Craig realized in that moment that he was talking about the difference between Joey and his dad. That like, this is totally different. All right, so let's see what you could get away with. Yeah, let's see what I could get away with here. It's very cool. Anyway, so we're jumping ahead.
We're just going where the conversation goes. Au naturel.
Joey leaves, but before he leaves, he shows off to the crowd who his date is for the weekend.
Yeah, he hops in the car, the sports car, the convertible, with a gorgeous lady, leaving the group of teenage boys picking their jaws up off the ground.
Slack-jawed. Yeah. I'll see you guys later. He puts on his glasses and just...
I mean, this is like a classic movie trope, right? Especially from the 80s. All right. A Toronto streetcar transition, and we are at the piercing studio with Ellie and Ashley in tow. Ashley's obviously freaking out a little bit. This big tattooed biker dude, Attila, will be using a gigantic piercing needle to do this piercing procedure, the belly button piercing, tomorrow morning. And it's agreed. We're going to do it. Now, Attila, I got to say, is also played by George Buza.
He looked very familiar to me.
He looks so familiar to me. I feel like we've worked together since this episode.
And this episode spoke to my heart because in those days, those specific days of me filming this episode, the tattoo and piercing parlor was my home away from home. And,
yeah, man.
And gauges were just, it was just part of the process.
Gauges.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's how come Shane's ear holes are so big.
I never did
the spacers.
I had lobe, cartilage.
Yeah.
Rook, lobe.
Whoa.
Conch.
And your belly button.
Cartilage, tragus, which had to be pierced twice. Tongue.
You sound like you're speaking Klingon right now.
I know.
No, I get it too. I wasn't quite as geared up as you. A lot of my friends were this kind of gothy, edgy, rockery type stuff. And I found myself in pool halls really young and like tattoos, like, you know, like this whole thing. I get this kind of world of like wanting to embrace this new edgy side. It was a little scary. It was a little bad.
I desperately wanted to get my eyebrow pierced, but my agent told me absolutely not because back in those days, it's probably changed a bit, but he was saying that even if you take it out, that hole will be enough to lose you gigs with Family Channel, with Disney. So absolutely do not do that. But he said the same thing for tattoos. And I wasn't, you know, defiance was the name of the game. So I'm like, okay, fine. Yeah, no tattoos. So that's why I got tattoos.
Spider web on my face.
No, I wanted to get them in a place that could be hidden completely, which is still, for the most part, my MO. And I got them on my feet. I got footprints on one foot and a lizard on the side of one of my other feet. Stencils that were part of the, the catalog that they had there.
Yeah.
And it was just simply so I didn't have to listen and no one would know. And my oldest brother, because my parents would never have let me do it, my oldest brother posed as my dad to do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, you were maybe just as bad as these boys are about to be. All right. So we are back in this tattoo parlor. Ashley is coming back tomorrow, but she needs to get a permission slip signed by her mom, and she's not convinced that her mother will sign, so she kind of reluctantly slinks away to see what she can do. Back at Craig's house party, if you can call it that, they're all eating junk food and playing cards and yawning. They're bored as heck, and they're fighting about what to do, what's exciting, how can they make this more awesome. Spinner has an idea. He says, basically, like, let's live life on the edge, which is very funny because in the very next scene, they're exiting the convenience store and Spinner is showing how fun spray cheese in a can be.
Film magic. Every time it cut, spit that thing out because I was desperately, I lost all this weight. I was so terrified of rebounding and putting it back on.
Yeah, and here you are doing that, like 10 takes of cheese sprayed in
so
the mouth.
So straight right into the garbage afterwards. Also, fun fact, that convenience store is what would become the Dot.
The Dot Grill. That's right. Nobody in this group is convinced. They want their proverbial money back. Ashley, at home now, is handing her mom the permission slip, expecting the worst. But surprisingly, Ashley's mom gives her the permission. So I guess we're seeing here for the first time that Ashley is entering a new phase of autonomy and her mom's got some more trust in her.
Mm-hmm. And also parents can be cool too.
Parents can be cool.
And I have a suspicion that Ashley, maybe she didn't know if her mom would give her permission, but she was hoping that she wouldn't. Because then she wouldn't be on the hook to get this piercing. She was afraid of needles, as we find out later on. So when she's like, oh, no, my mom will never give me permission for this. Was just hoping it would end there.
Yeah.
And then so her mom is actually putting her in a situation that's making her more uncomfortable, not
that's
less.
That's true. You know how parents do the tough love, sort of be careful what you wish for? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll give you enough rope to hang yourself.
Yeah.
And maybe her mom was not convinced that, like, she knows her daughter. Maybe she's not convinced
like,
that her daughter
never
would go
through,
with
this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And sure. If you do, remember, in 5 years, when you're on the streets, I told you so. Like, yeah, mom, it's
when
a belly
you're on
button
the street because you got your belly button pierced and yeah. Life is over and you're.
Yeah. 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 No one's hiring me. Oh, it's just.
Back at Craig's, nobody is having fun watching Spinner spraying more cans of cheese down his throat when Marco has a dare idea. Ooh, let's liven this up. Prank phone calls. Remember those?
Mm-hmm.
Kids do prank phone calls anymore?
I don't think you can because you know who's calling.
Yeah, the caller ID, right?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, the days of mystery calls are over. And if it's a number you don't recognize, unless you're running a business, you don't
pick it up.
You don't pick it up.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
But back in the day, kids, we picked up every number. We were like, what is this? It could be my great aunt calling from Chicago. It could be a prize of $100,000, which was $1 million back then because of inflation. It could
be
anything.
Like a radio station calling a random number. Yeah.
And yeah.
It could be a telemarketer. It
could be
a scam and you had no idea.
Columbia CD House was like a scam, you know, like they'd sign you up on something you couldn't get out of the contract. And that's like the version of scam that existed back then. They were just
subscription deliveries.
Yeah. Subscription deliveries. Yeah, yeah. Anyways. Okay. Prank phone calls. Sean is up to bat with the phone, but Marco leads him into a trap and he dials Emma's phone number. When Emma picks up the phone on the other end and questions Sean about calling his ex, a tacky move, Sean is absolutely furious.
Yeah, that was a good prank, by the way. That was good.
And I'm sorry we did this sort of like unceremoniously, but like because Marco's been on camera before, but this is the first time we're really meeting Marco. He's speaking. We get a sense of his character.
He's a joker. He's a little bit of a prankster. He's a cool kid.
I had no idea.
It's true, but it was a good prank. Well done.
Spinner, Marco, Sean, and Craig are commiserating outside, and this is where Craig starts opening up about his dad and starts comparing him to how Joey is kind of. I don't want to say raising him. It's not really the right thing, but sort of mentoring him, I guess.
Mentoring. Guiding him. Yeah.
Guiding him. And of course, this all culminates in like the proof of like, hey, Joey, let me drive. Like, how cool is that?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I remember being that age and was like, what? You got to drive? That's amazing. What was it like?
When I first got my driver's license, there were so many nights, cause I was fortunate enough. I was making good money from the show. I actually had my own car, ready for me when I had my license to drive it. And I would just take my friends driving. It didn't matter where we went.
Yeah.
Just drive. The song title. There you go.
Just drive, man. I get it. I get the song now. It's about driving. I remember the same thing. And I learned I got my driver's license like the day before getting onto a plane and going to Los Angeles for pilot season 1 year. So I learned how to drive in the wild by myself for the very first time in LA, which was like a whole nother experience. Is like, as you know, the highways are big
the
and
LA
fast
traffic.
And
yeah, yeah.
It's an urban sprawl. So you got to drive all over the place. And it was the same thing. I was just so happy to, and you know, California. So we'd go to the beach all the time. I was like taking people to Santa Monica and driving down Sunset and what. It was just like, yeah, it was awesome.
And traffic doesn't even bother you at that point. Like you're just,
look at
all these cars.
You want to be in, you want to be in traffic.
Yeah. You're like, the longer you could be on the road, the better. Yeah. Yeah. Look at me. I'm still growing up. This is rush hour.
Yeah.
Why do my parents complain about rush hour?
Card carrying driver. Complaining about the traffic.
And how quickly that goes away. Six months in, I don't drive in rush hour anymore.
For sure. Okay, so they get this idea suddenly. Let's just take the car out. Yeah, the car at the dealership. Like, Joey's gone. He won't notice. That'd be pretty sweet, right? And everybody agrees, especially Sean. I love how into this Sean is.
Sean is very into it.
He's like, man, this would be incredible. Like, if we could do that, I think this could change our lives.
They potentially right now would be the only people going back to school that would have a story like that. They might have been, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At 14 years old. Yeah, we all went for a drive together and instantly coolest kids in school.
They're reacting to driving at that in a way that now I would react to hot air ballooning. Somebody was like, yo, I got tickets to this hot air balloon thing this weekend. You want to come? I'd be like, what? Really?
Yeah. Oh
my God. Yeah. Like, seriously?
Yeah. For me, that would be like skydiving or cage diving with great white sharks.
Jeez.
Like, yeah.
You're an adrenaline junkie, Shane.
No, there are just certain things on my bucket list. Okay. It's not it. It's just, I want to see that shark up
gotta
close.
Gotta get that hit anyhow.
Okay. Are you not interested? Sorry. No part of you. You're so into.
I go to South
aviation.
Africa almost every year.
And no.
Idea of getting in a cage with a straight white shark is also, and I hate to be the mood killer, but those businesses that do that are not ecologically sustainable, and they're actually not really great. They're not that great for the sharks or for like the oceans.
Why is it? Because they're
buzzkill. It's because the chumming in the water and like they're attracting sharks into like close proximity with humans, which then gets sharks in trouble often with humans, and then they get killed. And then,
I see.
And also, like, you're creating like a feeding frenzy around an animal like that, and the association between like a cage and a diver in the water then actually creates problems for divers and surfers just out there. And
fair enough, you're putting yourself more on sharks' radar humans on sharks' radar. Yeah,
but years ago the sharks all left South. Okay, anyways, we're digressing.
No, but I was going to ask you about skydiving. There's no part of you that wants to skydive.
I would, maybe.
That one, I would take that over bungee jumping.
Really?
For some reason.
But you're so attached to planes. You know you're going to jump out of one?
Yeah.
Sweet. The next day, the kids wake up and Craig grabs the car keys. He is determined not to chicken out. So they go for it and they break into the dealership lot. They get into that car. Marco is getting cold feet now. This is like a little too much for him.
You need the voice of reason.
But they start it up. It backfires. I love the false start here with the car. And it's a great little, just a warning shot. Like maybe the universe is telling you not to do this. No matter. A little restart and they are off. Watch out for that streetcar. Dude, there's three Toronto streetcar transitions in this episode.
Lest we forget that it's Toronto.
We got all our funding because they put three streetcars in this one episode.
This episode brought to you by the Toronto Transit Commission and Metrolinx.
Oh, Ashley and Ellie are off to the piercing studio again, but Ashley seems to be wigging out when she says goodbye to her mom and she takes a good look at the bush clippers that her mom is like cutting the...
Because that's the same thing.
Yeah, it's like, they're not going to like cut your arm off.
Yeah. It's like if she was going for a haircut, she was really nervous about that. I can see the correlation, but
she was going to kid cuts. Back to the joyride, the radio, and I love this throwback because the radio was so big back then. We didn't have the internet really. We had a little bit of the internet. It was the radio still ruled, you know, and there's an advertisement on the radio on a radio show. They've got Kid Elric tickets. Even though it's sold out, if you win this contest, you drive to this or you go to this park that they've set up in and answer a skill testing question, you could win tickets. Hey, wouldn't you know it? That's exactly what the kids wanted to do at the beginning of the episode.
Hey. Yeah, they
I thought there was more to that. Hey. I thought there was
it's funny how that worked out. Almost like it's a TV show.
Almost perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's some conversation about whether they should actually be driving this car beyond just the local neighborhood. And pretty much they vote and they veto any dissenting voices. They drive to the park It is decided they speed off in that direction.
Yeah, and they didn't just drive like to the park parking lot. Like they drove right up to the desk and might have run over some people on the way there. Like they were right there.
Yeah. Ashley at the piercing studio is about to get pierced, and Attila is very sweetly walking her through it, the process. You're going to feel this. You're going to, you know, it's going to, you might feel a little pinch. It's going to be a little cold. But man, these close-ups, did you notice those close-ups of like the forceps on her, or the, like the pinchers on her belly button? And I was like, I was getting uncomfortable. So I get it. I mean, it was really feeling Ashley's POV. And of course, Ashley backs down at the last second. She can't go through with it.
To the dismay of both Ellie and Attila.
Craig, Spinner, Sean, and Marco screech to a halt, and they jump out of the car and into the lineup where the previous two kids can't for the life of them answer the simplest question for these tickets. The question is, who is Kid Elric's wife? And who is it who answers? Is it Craig?
It was Craig, yeah.
Yeah, Craig goes, hey, that's a trick question, because Kid Elric is divorced. Hey, that's it. They won.
Yeah, that typical, well, you could tell him that when you hang out with him tomorrow night, because you're going to the,
I do remember this. I mean, I remember contests for tickets on the radio, and I did call in and I did try to get them.
I never won any radio contest, but I did win that contest.
You won the Britney Spears, and you'll never let us forget it.
Why would I?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It was such a fast progression from, oh my God, there's tickets for Kid Elric. We got to get there. Speed down to the park, jump out. They run right up to her. She goes, oh, you might be able to answer the question. They're like, we can. What's what is the name of the wife of Kid Elric? Trick question. He's divorced. Hey, you won. Then they're like, awesome. We're going. And they jump right back into the car.
Right back into the car.
And speed all the way back. Like, it was like the quickest trip to a radio contest and back I've ever seen.
There was no one else in line, unless that's why they drove up all the way, that he knocked everyone else out of the line.
Okay, so they're in the car on their way back now to the dealership, and Spinner lets one rip. Sorry I had to bring that up.
It's okay. Excitement makes him fart.
That and all the cheese whippets.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah.
It's fun until the cops pull up, and I'm thinking these kids are toast.
Mm-hmm. And could not look more guilty as they're sitting there either.
I mean, the cops are really should have probably investigated this car.
Yeah. Just doesn't. Do you know who those cops were, by the way? Special
no.
shout out. So we had production manager David Lowe.
No, David Lowe was one of those cops. Oh my God.
In the driver's seat.
And we
had our boy in props, Derek Graham, was the cop in the right seat. They both did a really good job. They looked like cops.
Nailed it.
No one else would know that. We knew.
So they get back to the car. The cops speed away. Phew. They get back to the lot and they park the car. Here I am, like, waiting for the crash, right? Like, okay, they're out of the car, but maybe the door's going to slam on it, or something's going to fall on it, or whatever. Nothing happens to the car at all. So we're kind of, again, we're subverting these expectations and setting up this tension.
No one would be the wiser. They got away with it. It was just the best of days. One for the books.
Until Joey busts out of the car lot office, furious, fuming. He basically sends everybody else home except for Craig. The silent alarm was triggered, and now Craig is in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and once again, registers on Craig's face. He's never seen Joey that angry towards him before.
Yeah, he must have been thinking, like, is this all adults? Like, do all adults act this way?
All people get angry,
yeah,
but some resort to violence,
and most
don't. But he doesn't know that yet. He's only experienced one parental figure get angry and always went the same way. So there's still a lot of fear involved.
Ashley back with Ashley and Ellie, Ashley is really embarrassed for not going through with piercing her belly button. She says that she wants to gain points with Ellie, and Ellie tells her, like, you don't need to get a piercing to impress me. We're friends. Like, you can just be you and I'll be me, and you don't have to live up to some sort of expectation, which I thought was nice. Because, you know, this is kind of the first time we're seeing Ashley having a conversation with a friend like this. It might be the first time we're seeing Ashley really concerned about being someone's friend.
Yeah. Well, like
she really cares.
Yeah. And I think she has to reevaluate how she treats friends, because of the loss that she just went through. Mm. Trying not to repeat that. Also growing up a bit and learning about herself now. Like we said, there some friendships you tend to lead. Some are everyone seems to be on the same page, and some you always feel like you're trying to gain their approval in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And yeah, obviously with in this one, she still feels like she's on shaky ground in this mm-hmm. friendship. Yeah. So it was a very sweet moment.
Yeah,
Ellie basically saying like, "Hey, we're friends." Like, don't worry about this.
Yeah. No, I liked it. I liked it a lot. Back at Joey's house, Craig is in trouble. Joey's really laying it out. That was unacceptable. The one line that I really liked from Joey was that he says, "You broke my trust." He explains to Craig what he did. He doesn't just yell at him. He said he's kind of, you know, he's just disappointed in him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he puts a boundary up, and he's very sternly enforcing it. But he's definitely not being physically violent with Craig. And I think Craig is wondering about, like, he's experiencing the difference.
To learn that someone could get angry with you without... Yeah. Crossing that line. And I also, that was a really nice moment where Craig stands up and he's like, I don't have to listen to you. You're not my dad. And mm-hmm. Joey just says, sit down. And Craig's like, yeah, all right. Because he has a respect for Joey mm-hmm. and he understands that he messed up. And that was just a flippant, stupid kid like thing to say, like, you're not my dad. Like, sit down, man, and take your comeuppance here.
Sure. And then Joey says that he's grounded for quite a long time, and he's not going to the Kid Elric concert anymore. So he rips up the tickets. And Craig is sweating it. What is he supposed to tell his friends about the tickets? And on Craig rethinking his life choices up to this moment, we freeze.
Yeah, I like that it wasn't a drawn out thing.
Yeah.
He ripped up the tickets. What am I supposed to tell him? Well, you screwed up, kid.
Yeah.
Consequences. That's it. Yeah. Fun episode, though.
Very fun episode. And both the storylines kind of mirror each other in this case, right? So you've got Ashley and Craig who are trying to expand their universe, trying to grow, and they end up biting off a little more than they can chew.
And they're also trying to impress their friends by the thrill seeking, right?
Yeah, and peer pressure, mm-hmm. which we can all relate to. Okay, well, as you all know or may not know, we at DGrads, we've got a Discord, DGrads Alumni. You can find us there and you can ask any questions there. You can also email us at dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We love to hear from you guys. We read all the fan mail. We might not reply to all of it, but we love hearing from you and we see it. Okay, this is from Kimmy W, who says, for Shane, you mentioned you were a new actor when you got Degrassi. What did you learn most about yourself or the profession after season one? And what were you able to carry into season two? At any time, were you afraid of being cut from the show or not being asked to come back for another season?
That is a question I don't think I've ever been asked before. And I've been asked many questions about the time that I was on the show.
I was blown away with how many moving parts there were. The technical aspect, the production side.
Like, what do you mean? Like the gear, the amount of people that were involved.
Yeah, the different departments, the process of writers bringing an idea together, and then all of the phases it had to go through before actually going to picture, revisions and, all that. Then, I also realized that up until that point, any of the acting that I did was school plays and, you know, improv classes. I did not realize how hard it was and how much energy it took to memorize these scripts and bring these empty lines, into focus. No matter how well written something is, if the performance isn't there, it's going to come off hollow and stale and uninteresting. Mm-hmm. I realized how I was in the big leagues now, and I was working with some very experienced actors, and I really wanted to do the work. So I realized how much I had to grow and take seriously when I thought I was further ahead than I was, until I saw my performance, you know, weighed against other people I was sharing the scene with. And then I really did start taking it more seriously. And as the seasons went on, and I was taking acting classes and private coaching, I could see the things starting to come together. I was very nervous about not making the cut. And thankfully, the fans saw something in me, the writers and producers saw something in me. So they gave me the time that I needed to figure it out. Everyone was, I don't think anyone was totally comfortable with their role on the show, because you knew that it could always end. The show might not come back, or your character might, for no particular reason other than, you know, a decision was made above your head and you got to go. So, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Thanks, Kimmy W. Gertie the Dino, hey Gertie, says, and this is just a funny comment, to me, Drake's first single will always be the Come On Girl and Make My Lunch rap.
I think it was Shut Up Girl and Make My Lunch.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't say that on a podcast though, so.
No, I know. That one has been quoted to me so many times on Cameo. It's one of my most asked for quotes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny. Oh, what's mine? Bummer times. At least there's a party.
Bummer times.
Bummer times. Some lines, you read them and you go, God, how am I going to say
wonder if Cassie's is cuckoo bananas.
100%. Shane and Mike, I would love to hear how you got into professional acting back in your childhood days. That's from Kenzie Penguin.
Go for it.
Shall we? My best friend growing up was Alex Campbell, who was an actor at the time. He was on a bunch of TV shows and movies, and you might know his bigger sister, Nev Campbell. And so he was always going to set, and I knew I wanted to make movies. I loved movies. I came from a movie obsessed family. I just wanted to do anything to make those. And one day his agent called him. I was at his place and he picked up the phone and she said, Alex, I've got an audition for you. And he was like, I don't want to do it. So I, in the background, said, I'll do it. And his agent was like, who's that? He's like, oh, it's just my stupid friend, Mike. And I was like, no, I'm serious. I'll go to the audition tomorrow. And that's what happened. And she gave me a shot and she started repping me. And I went to acting school and I learned how to do it a little bit, I think, maybe. And that's how it was. It was like just a total luck of the draw. But I always knew I wanted to make films and movies. And I had already been volunteering on sets, even at a very young age. Through programs here in Toronto, on like student films and stuff. I didn't know what I was doing. I just wanted to be on set.
With me, I actually can't remember what got me into it. I know that I was shy because I was a bigger kid, I developed I was the funny guy. I always liked to make people laugh, but I was still sort of shy. I wasn't the most outgoing guy, but for some reason, I really liked to perform. And especially when it was a controlled environment, I liked it. And one thing led to another, school plays, and my brother had done some background work, and he told me that he could get me in touch with an agent. That didn't pan out, but then I caught the bug. I found an agent. I had no experience, went to the meeting, and they told me that they need to see a little bit more on a resume before they would take me on, asked me to go and take some acting classes, improv or something else, and come back with proof of that, and they would give me a shot. And I went to Second City for 8 weeks, and I loved it, and I ended up going for 2 years, but I went back to them after that 8 weeks, and they gave me a shot, and I waited 6 months before getting any auditions, and then I got 4 in a row, week after week, and Degrassi was the third. So yeah. Six and a half.
Second City.
It was so much fun. Second City.
It's so fun. I think I might go back.
This is a great exercise. You don't even need to have it for acting. It's good for life.
It's like a meditation, right? You get to go to a room and you've got permission to just follow an impulse and create something with a bunch of other people who are also following their impulses, and you don't know what's going to happen. It's like the ultimate giving over control and just seeing what happens.
And creating together, right? Yeah. In the moment. Because you're always going with someone else's idea. So you're seeing what these two wacky people trying to get onto the same page and make it work. And it's
incredible. Yeah, it's quick, one word at a time story. Go, Shane. You start it.
Hi.
My
day
was
not
so
fantastic.
Because all my
time
was
tied
up
with
customers
who hate dogs
and
cats
and
fish.
Incredible.
We still got it.
All right, folks. This has been really, really fun. Thank you for tuning in as usual. Mm-hmm. I did not mention our Patreon. If you want early access to ad-free episodes, video episodes where you can see our beautiful faces, please follow us on Patreon. Subscribe at Degrads. And we got a lot going on there and it's such a great community. And we like to chime in and we also do like little Q&A videos on there. So you get a lot out of it and you get to know more about Degrassi and Degrads.
And doesn't that sound amazing? Isn't that why we're all here? I know it's why I'm here. We've done it. We've come to the conclusion of another Degrads episode. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you listened all the way to the end so you could hear this thanks. Otherwise, who am I really thanking but you, Mike?
It's just you and me, buddy.
This has been Degrads with Shane Kipple and Mike Lobel. And you best believe we will see you next week.
Adieu. It was a callback to the French. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, I got it.